Hello, and welcome back to the Double Take podcast with Jess and Jenny, where we give our takes on all things TV. We're back with another check-in plus a longer sort of blow-by-blow about the latest episode of Shogun, episode 5. I can't remember actually what the episode is called, but I've been calling it Too Much Sake. Jess, did you buy any chance?
Blame it on the sake. What is the actual name? I think it's something about
something
a fist.
Something about a fist. Yeah, like break the fist or the broken fist.
Broken to the fist.
Not a grammar I'm familiar with, but I sure.
Broken. I guess like if your body is broken all the way to your fist.
From your toes to your fist. Yeah. Before we get into Shogun, though, I feel like there are a couple of things we could talk about. I've been busy this week. I remember last week I was sort of like, tell me everything you're watching because I haven't seen anything. But now I've seen lots of things. How about you?
I didn't know if you meant busy, like busy in life and therefore couldn't watch anything, or busy in the way that we mean it when we say we've been working. So much work, so much TV. I watched a lot of the same few shows. So like depth, not breadth.
Did you finish Three Body Problem? Is that one of the ones?
No, I'm on episode 7 of 8. So almost. Have you watched it yet?
Yeah, we watched the first 3 episodes last night. And I might go ahead without Carter, depending, because I would like to keep watching. And I don't know how much time he has. But yeah, the first 3 episodes, like them a lot. It's giving very – we hadn't really talked about this, but when you were first describing it, I was trying to determine what it sounded like. It's got a lot of 1899 energy in the like soundtrack, the fact that it's sort of spooky and made for Netflix. I was getting a lot of parallels in the production.
I didn't think of that, but I think now that you say it, sure. However, they get into the territory of annoying and mismatched needle drops. Not even needle drops, just background music. But there was a few in episode either 5 or 6 or maybe both of those that I really didn't like, and it's starting to annoy me, and I don't know why they're doing it. Like Video Games by Lana Del Rey.
Oh.
Was just playing over a whole long sequence.
Yeah, in the first 3 episodes, it's mostly like orchestral soundtrack stuff. Like the thing that I'm mostly – I'm going to try to do it and I'm going to regret it, but it's the – like that like drop sound that was all over 1899 is also all over the first couple of episodes in the like foreboding scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that works well. I think the – Lana Del Rey works less well. I think this is my overall thought about the show so far, is that I really, really liked the first 2 episodes and I have slowly liked it less ever since.
The third episode was so good. I thought it was good.
I might have liked the first 3. It's hard to remember exactly when I started to be like, meh. And I don't dislike it. I very much still want to finish it. But it's those little things production-wise that have sort of taken me out of it. Some of the CGI in episode like 5 is really bad for knowing how big this budget was, like confusingly bad. And it's, I mean, that's fine. It's a TV show. It's not, I don't know, but then you can't really make those concessions anymore when you know how big these budgets are. It's like, yeah, it's a TV show, but your budget was $160 million.
You find a different way to do it. I feel like CGI people are getting a little jaded with because you know what can be done, but also if you just are throwing in a random piece of CGI, it's sometimes like that doesn't fit, doesn't look good.
It's this really big scene, and you'll know what I mean when you get there. And it sort of sucks out some of the dramatic tension just because it looks kind of silly, and it's definitely not a silly moment. And maybe I'm being overcritical, but I feel like everything before that worked pretty well, even when, like, yeah, there are a few moments where it's clearly like special effects or whatever it is, it doesn't really take me out of it. But then for some reason, this one scene really was like a turning point for me in terms of production quality. And then since then, there's just been a few things that I've found very off-putting. But more than that, it's just that I think the story is losing me a little bit.
Got it.
And I'm not done with it. I still like it, to be clear. But yeah, I liked the first 2 episodes so much. I also think it helps to see them in a theater, which is crazy because that's not like an actual criticism. You are never watching TV in a theater. However, being able to watch this in a theater, the first 2, made me realize how much better that is, especially with a show like this, which is like, we literally keep watching it and I look at our TV and I'm like, our TV is too small. I need a bigger TV.
I watched this on my laptop and still enjoyed it. So maybe this is just a like difference in
I think I'm getting spoiled with the theater. I'm watching so much in theaters these days. Like I go to the theater like 3 times a week. And every time I watch something otherwise, I'm like, you know what would be great? You know what would make this better if this were in a theater?
See, I like movie theaters. I went to go see Dune 2 this weekend. I feel like I've seen – yeah, definitely not as often in the theater as you are, but I like the experience. There are some things that I just can't – it's so loud. There is no reason for them to be as loud as they are, and I feel like they're all – it's like all theaters collectively were like, shoot it up a couple decibels, especially with the previews, but then also during the actual – like I need to bring earplugs next time. And I don't think that's like an I'm old thing. I think it's like a I don't want to lose my hearing.
I have been in certain theaters where it's seemingly too loud, and then others where it's seemingly too quiet. So I think maybe you were just in a theater where it was like sometimes they're not getting it right. I don't know. It kind of sounds like you're a complaining old person, to be honest.
If I were old, wouldn't that mean I'd lost my hearing and that everything would be just loud enough?
It's not like old person. It's like a middle-aged dad at a concert being like, well, this is a little too loud.
I mean, Dune is all about sound. So I was very much like, oh, no.
Oh, the sound's so good in it. I'm bummed that you had the experience with that movie. Oh, but thoughts otherwise?
Oh, I liked it better than the first. I feel like I had so many people being like, it's so good. It's just like a really good movie. You'll love it. And I did like it. I liked it much better than, yeah, a lot of other almost 3 hour long movies that I've seen lately. I only noticed the time in that it was getting to a certain point and I was like, oh, it's pretty long and I haven't been itching to leave or like do something else. So that was cool. It was fine. I liked it. Zendaya was in it a lot more. I don't know.
Yeah, I love her. Do you know what I mean though? I because I'm pretty sure I said this after I saw it on the pod when we were talking about it, that I feel like if I'd read the books, I would like it even more. Like it's so clear that there's all this other
like layered
stuff. Mm-hmm. happening, and I'm like, I'm understanding it enough to follow the movie, but I'm not understanding it enough as much as I want to. Like, I want to know more about these things that they're just like skimming the surface.
Yes, I agree with you. I don't have that enough to actually go read the books because I know how long they are. Maybe when I have a period of like a long time that I'm taking off and need to have a good book. But I agree. I kind of want to read like a Wikipedia summary. Does that count?
It's not the same thing. Not what I mean. But I get what you mean. They are very long. I don't know that I will actually do it.
There were a couple of things I noticed that, again, didn't bother me so much, but I was like, oh, I think this would bother me if it were a TV show or I don't know, the way that they did it was just good enough that it didn't take away, but I did notice it. So there were a lot of jumps. And they left a lot to the viewers, not imagination, but sort of just like fill in the blanks, which sometimes is really good. And I think they did an okay job at it. There are a lot of things where like could have been montages in another movie or in a TV show. For example, there are a lot of them. But when Paul is like, can I learn how to ride a sandworm? And Zendaya is like, no. And then they have that whole like cutesy scene. And she's like, yeah, maybe like you're not like of the desert, but you are like one of us, but you couldn't run the thing. And then in the next scene, he's like doing his trial where he rides the sandworm. And I get that you're supposed to fill in the blanks of like, oh, he's been training for this. But I did have a moment where I was like, how much time has passed? How long has he been with these people? So there were moments like that, that again, I'm like trying really hard not to complain because while I was watching it, it didn't bother me. But afterwards I was like, huh, this movie was already 3 hours long. And I feel like they could have made it even like they could have broken it into another two pieces and explored a bunch of stuff. And I wouldn't necessarily be mad about it. Those are my final thoughts.
I think that's kind of what I mean is that, and I didn't, not specifically like the sandworm scene, although I understand what you're saying with that, but it was just other things where I was like, I know stuff happened and I can figure out and I know enough of what happened based on context clues to follow this story. But I would literally watch like 20 hours of Dune. What else other than Dune and Three Body Problem?
Okay, movie-wise, I finally watched Anyone But You because I wanted a rom-com for my Friday night. I was alone this weekend for the most part, and so I was like, oh, I'll sit down, watch a rom-com, have my Friday night dinner, snacks, cozy night. Anyone But You, I had heard the discourse. I knew it wasn't going to be that good. It was fine. Everyone was right. It wasn't that good. The disappointment is that, like, I think it could have been pretty good. It had all the elements of, like, oh, I could be having a cheesy, fun time right now. And every so often there would just be beats that were missed and little cutesy things where I was like, oh, I can see the potential of that. And they're just not leaning into the rom-com cheese of it all in the way that they could.
I saw your scathing TikTok after the first 5 minutes.
The meet cute scene has potential. It's very 90s in a lot of ways. Just the like comedic timing, maybe on Sydney Sweeney's part. I think she's a really great actress. I just think this was a little bit odd.
I don't know how I feel about Sydney Sweeney. I don't want to be a hater, but
she's really good in
White
Lotus.
Sometimes I think she's really good. Yeah, sometimes I think she's great. And other times I feel like I'm missing something. Well, I actually just saw a Sydney Sweeney movie this weekend as well.
Oh, the
Immaculate,
new one, yeah.
The horror movie. And there were certain scenes where I was like, I don't know that she's good. And other scenes where I was like, oh, this is why Sydney Sweeney is Sydney Sweeney. So it's just really odd that I think, I don't know if it's just like certain themes she does better with or certain emotions even.
Yeah, I had internalized it as like, okay, she's not like a comedic actress, you know, like she doesn't do the lighthearted comedy as well. But if you're, I mean, for this horror movie, I guess that's not, there are definitely other things that you found fault with.
To speak about Immaculate otherwise for a moment, I thought it was fine. You obviously won't watch it, but for anyone else who is potentially interested, it's a very decent horror movie. I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. I wanted more from it, and it for a second seemed like it was going to go there. There's so much to mine from this plot. It's about this girl who gets recruited to this convent in Italy, and there's shady stuff happening. But basically, I'm not going to give away anything about what's going on, but there are themes of like religious fanaticism and how it can turn like dark. And obviously the horror elements are that, like, well, you know, from the trailer, the convent is not what it seems. But why it's not what it seems had the potential to be a really interesting theme that they just sort of don't explore. In the end, it's just kind of a normal horror movie. It stays pretty surface level, and I was bummed by that.
Got it. Yeah, I probably won't be watching that.
No, you definitely shouldn't. It actually did. I liked that it did make me jump. There was like one part where a jump scare actually made me – I was drinking Diet Coke, and I got Diet Coke on myself, and I was like, whoa, that never happens. So I like was excited for that.
Yeah, I watched Three Body Problem at parts with my hand over my face. So I feel like
– oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Listen, spooky. They're trying to make it spooky. I'm falling for the spookiness. Something.
When is it spooky?
Lots of times. Lots of times when you know. Okay, I'm going to say this without giving anything away. But after, what's his name? Sam in Game of Thrones. But the.
John? Jack?
Yeah, the chip guy.
Jack? Jack.
So after he and Jin meet. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to say too much else, but they meet the person that they've been playing this game, and they meet the person, and she starts to tell them about things, and he walks away and he goes home, and he goes home. And as he's walking through his house, his lights are turning on and off, like following him. And there's this like foreboding soundtrack underneath. And you're like, I know someone's in there. I know something's going to happen. That kind of thing.
I see what you mean. There are sort of spooky moments, man. You really can't watch
it. No. It's a lot of tension, and I can only do so much.
I think it's just exposure. Like, you just need to expose yourself to more of it. Like, if you just sat down and watched a bunch of horror movies, you'd be like, I get it. I see the beats. Like, and then you can just appreciate
them. But why? Why do I need to do that?
Because then we could talk about them.
Ugh, I guess.
I don't have anyone to talk about scary movies with. Mm.
Does Matt not like
– I guess – well, my mom and sister like horror movies. They just – I feel like I haven't seen the new ones. But no, Matt doesn't like them. But he says it's not because they scare him, just because they're bad. And I'm like, sounds fake. But no, he just like doesn't understand why. He's like, why is it fun? So it's kind of your take, honestly. But I don't think he gets like – it's not like he's sitting there like, oh my god, this is so scary, I can't watch. He's just like, what's the point? Why are we doing this?
I understand from like 10 feet back, I understand the perspective of people like being scared. Like the same – like people like thrills. I can understand that intellectually, but I can't put myself through that in the same way. Like I like roller coasters. I don't know that I like my heart racing because I think something's going to like come out around the corner or yeah, I don't know.
Well, I don't like real life. Like you couldn't pay me to go to a haunted house.
See, that surprises me.
Like, you know, those are fake. Yeah, no, absolutely not. 100% no. I'm in the safety of my home or in a theater and that's fine. I've learned how to deal with that. We were watching scary movies at a young age in my household and maybe that's why, but like real life, absolutely not. A hard no.
I remember watching that in your basement maybe, The Orphan. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Did you watch that in my basement?
Yeah. Oh, everyone was like, let's watch a horror movie. And I was like, okay.
Poor Jenny.
And I've been thinking about it ever since.
That's so funny. I'm sorry if that scarred you.
What a horrifying just like thing. Trust no one. That is what horror movies teach me.
I don't like them because they're scary or like because they will scare me. But I like I guess there's some that I really don't like, and that's kind of what Matt means is like, well, what's the point of watching them? Like the ones that are just trying to scare you, like that are just full of jump scares. No, that's not doing anything for me. But there are scary movies, horror movies, I guess I should call them. There are movies in the horror genre that are saying something through their use of horror. And I like the intersection of the theme, like thematically interesting material and feeling a little spooked. But a good movie is one that makes you feel something. And so for me, it's like, well, if I can feel like spine chilled, not literally just like, did I jump? Like, that's not it. It's like deeper than that. Then that's a good scary movie to me. Or sometimes they're just kind of fun, like Ready or Not, technically in the horror genre, but that's like a horror action.
Yeah, I was going to say there's an action element to that one.
Yeah. So obviously there, and then there's like horror comedy and I like those a lot too. But the ones that are like just deeply very scary, like they either need to be sort of like over the top in a fun way or they need to be like spine chilling and thematically deep. Or, I should say and or. Anyway, we could do a whole horror. I'm getting too into this, but we can move on from the horror movies and do that later. Did you watch anything else?
Yes. Two things. One, the documentary series on Max about Nickelodeon, Quiet on Set. Did you watch any of that?
Oh, you watched that? Did you watch the whole thing?
I watched the whole thing, yeah.
I haven't watched it. I can't watch stuff like that. I mean, I know the content, but I can't sit there and that's harrowing.
It's harrowing. And also, no, it's hard to critique something like that because like obviously it's good to have that out in the open. But I do feel like they sort of eked it out over, I think there were 5 episodes, maybe 4. I don't know. A lot of it was repeat stuff, which I like documentary series do that all the time. I almost think like a movie documentary would have been more what they should have gone for. Yeah, it was I had already heard a lot about it. There, honestly, if you've seen any of the like TikToks or tweets or whatever, like those are the highlights and they don't really go into much other detail, which again is probably good because you don't want to give too many details that victims would be uncomfortable with. But there is this level of curiosity that people have when you hear about horrific events and you just want to learn more and more, and they don't really go into a lot of it, again for good reason. So it does feel like they just sort of milked a couple of really sad stories over 4 or 5 episodes and could have done it more succinctly. It was, I don't know, sort of interesting. You can get all of it from an article about the documentary. So
my fear with docuseries is always that they're gonna sort of like beat a dead horse. I don't like that saying, but that's I feel like kind of what they do in general. Oh, is that the new way to say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, there's this like PETA has come out with a bunch of sayings that aren't harmful to animals.
Feed a fed horse. Yeah, and I mean I read Jeanette McCurdy's book and I got like – I feel like that was the first – not whistleblower, but like first big thing to come out, like really where people put the dots together instead of people just sort of like whispering behind closed doors and there being like rumors, because there were those before. But – I read that and I have followed articles and stuff since then. And I feel like I know what happened. I don't want to sit there and like feel sad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a horrible thing that happened. I guess it's flippant of me to say I don't want to sit there and feel sad. But yeah, that's just not – that makes me deeply unsettled.
I mean, yeah, you just hope that in today's work spaces, like when you have child actors, I have no idea what the current environment is for children actors. And I hope it's not, I actually don't know of that many children's shows. Like, I feel like there are probably things on Nickelodeon and Disney right now that I'm just not aware of because I'm not the Primark audience for that. And I'm like, are they okay? Like, is everyone making sure that this is fine? Because in some way, it seems exploitative to have kids working kind of in any capacity, that it seemed like, even without the bad workplace environment. So yeah, I don't really know what else to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going on long enough that people know that, like, child actors are fucked up and there has to be a reason why. So I think it's good to start, like, blowing the lid open on those stories and talking about them more in the open. And if there are more, then maybe this is the catalyst for those coming to light. And, like, I think that that's all positive. I just won't sit there and watch
it. I think that's totally fair. I think if you are listening to us talk about this and have no idea what we're talking about, go read an article about Nickelodeon and, like, or read Jeanette McCurdy's book. Like you said, like, there are a lot of good chapters that kind of say exactly what this documentary was saying. This has a more specific stories, but again, you'll get that in any of the articles about this docuseries. The other thing that I watched is much lighter hearted. I watched Davy and Jonesy's Locker on Hulu.
Oh yes. I've been awaiting your thoughts.
Yeah.
Wait, how much did you watch? I'm asking because I only watched two episodes.
I watched like five episodes, maybe six.
I couldn't do it.
I was like, maybe I still think there's potential that if I continued watching, I would get into the groove more potentially. But I just don't think it's for us. Like, I think it's for teens or tweens.
Who is it for? Is it?
I kind of think so. It feels like Paper Girls meets like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Sure. But my criticism of the show is that it is not funny.
Oh.
And it is trying so hard to be funny that it's actually not funny at all.
But I think, again, I think it would be funny to kids. That's like my
– maybe like literal 11-year-olds. Is that who this show is for? I don't know. I don't think so.
What was the other thing? Oh, it reminded me so much of Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide in a lot of ways.
Like, you think it's really for like preteens? I mean, maybe it is. Yeah, because those shows are all like wacky in a way that if I watched it right now, I'd be like, oh, this is like immature and just like stupid.
Right.
Which is what I got from this. But yeah, maybe I was expecting something that it's just not trying to be. I did have that energy. Yeah, like a Disney Channel vibe to it.
Yes. And just like every episode is sort of like a wow, wacky. Like, I get what you mean in thinking like, oh, it doesn't seem like it's for 11-year-olds because some of the jokes, I'm putting that in quotes, are about more like mature I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Not mature topics, just sort of like calling people sheep. But I feel like Nickelodeon Disney Channel's shows do that too. Or like their philosophical, whatever their point is in every single universe that they go to is sort of trying to, but then there's like, there are all those like silly goofy things about teaching people their heart song. It feels very Nickelodeon Disney Channel.
I watched two episodes. I don't think I got there, but yeah, now that you say that, maybe it really just is that. And that's why I didn't like it. It's just not going to be for me. I was really expecting like a sort of edgy or at least like thoughtful commentary via humor, and it's not that, so I bounced out real quick.
Yeah, I watched the fourth and fifth episodes while I was doing other things. It was just on in the background, and it has a bit per episode, and then they just do that bit till the end of the episode, you know, like this world is a world where everyone, like, no one knows that music exists. Okay, go. Like, this world is a world where everyone's wearing gems around their necks. And, like, there's a supreme overlord.
Yeah, it's silly. It's too silly for me.
Yeah, they feel like sketches.
Yeah, and then the characters aren't fleshed out at all. I mean, over two episodes, I don't know anything about these two people, let alone side characters. So why would I keep watching when I don't care about the characters? Like, you can't just give me silliness after silliness. You have to build up some aspect that makes me want to keep watching.
That's why I think it's not for us. I really strongly feel, and I will look this up, because I know that the actors are older, but they're playing 10th graders.
Sure. And that's, I mean, Ned's Declassified was your example earlier. Like, I'm sure those people were in their 20s. Or no, wait, they were playing middle schoolers in that show. So maybe they weren't 20, but still the point stands.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I would not recommend this to anyone our age per se.
To anyone. No. Probably to no one listening.
Unless you are listening.
12. I don't think we have any 12-year-old listeners.
If you have, you know, younger siblings, maybe they would like this. Although now that I'm thinking, I can't remember anything super inappropriate.
I think this would be fine for middle school age.
It's just weird that there's no way to see that. Hulu is kind of like a Wild West in terms of their UI.
No, it's a terrible UI for sure. But that just had me thinking, like, isn't that true for all of them? I mean, shows come out on Netflix that are for middle schoolers, and we just know that because they're...
I feel like they have the little keywords on Netflix that sometimes, maybe they don't necessarily say like for middle schoolers, but they'll be like, there's YA.
But I think sometimes... I'm just better at judging the content normally. Like when Goosebumps came out on Disney, I knew that. Well, and that's a remake of it. I mean, those are kids' books and previously kids' shows, kids' movies. Like, it kind of makes sense. Although that show tried to be actually, that's another criticism of that show specifically, is that it was like weirdly bridging the audiences of adult and youth. But like Shelter on Prime, did you watch that? Or do you remember me talking about that? Like, that felt very YA, but I don't think I really like knew that, other than that it was adapted from a series of books that were labeled YA. Like, on streaming services, they never really tell you. I'm always using context clues, and this one didn't have any context clues that like made me understand that it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Other than that it's set in a high school, but like there are a lot of shows I watch that are set in high schools.
I really was waiting for something to click and be like, oh, they're bringing back this theme. Like, oh, that's interesting. That's a good commentary. But that hasn't happened yet. Truly, it's been very episodic. Like I said, like every world has a different shtick and then they just kind of go with that. That's, I think, the last thing that's new that I've watched in the last week.
I don't think I have anything to add.
Okay. Shall we? Shogun?
We haven't already talked about. Yeah, we could talk about Shogun.
Episode 5.
We will be spoiling. So watch the episode and come back.
Or listen if you like to be spoiled.
First things first.
Fuji.
Unless you want to do your first. No. First things first. I win. I was right. He is alive.
Literally 2 episodes ago, I was like, oh, I kind of think he's alive now too. But yes.
I know, but I said it first. That's the very first note I wrote down. I win. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, he's alive. He's drunk in this episode. He's mean and angry, and we don't like him.
I totally got those vibes from the way we saw like the glimpses in the beginning.
Yeah. Seems a furthering of his character.
But I do think we learned some interesting things about Mariko. Well, we did obviously learn the things that were all like hinted at. But then I think what's interesting, my takeaway, and I'm skipping over the actual storyline, assuming everybody's watched and understands what I'm talking about. The fact that Mariko asks if she can kill herself every anniversary of her family's death, and her husband says no, either could be seen as like sadism, because he knows that she feels this deep shame and that would be her way of getting out of it, or he likes her actually a little bit somewhere deep inside. And I think that the way they showed his abuse and then subsequent like apology of it is actually playing more into the sort of typical like abusive husband cycle rather than like a sadistic man. Like, I think we're seeing a deeply troubled abusive person who thinks he cares about Mariko and like just doesn't, you know, it's not clicking for him. I don't think he actually is a sadist.
I don't think he's a sadist. I don't know that he super cares about Mariko. I think he cares a lot about tradition and like honor, and I would bet that he feels like he's been wronged because his wife, his like recent wife's family, had a lot of shame put on them. And he could do the honorable thing to her, which is let her die. But like, he's feeling like, no, like, and leave me to be without a wife and like to be attached to the shame on my own. Like, I feel like it's more selfish than he cares about her, and more like, not sadism. I know it's sounding like I'm saying like he just wants to hurt her, but I think he's like, this whole system of hiding your feelings and doing the right thing. And like all of the manners matter and everything you're allowed to do. Like it's all this game of chess. I feel like everyone is trapped by this society and is just trying to like move their way around in it. And this is his way of playing, is like, I'm going to assert my dominance where I can, because I feel like I've lost control in that I married into this family that is disgraced. So yeah, I don't think I buy the like he cares about her. I think he cares about saving face.
Yeah, and it could still play into what I was saying, like the abuse cycle is sort of like you feel, well, at least from what I know about it, like when you feel impotent, basically, like you lash out. And so like if society is keeping him feeling that way, then like that's why he's lashing out.
Totally.
I just think it's an interesting move or story. It's an interesting character that they've built where it's like showing another way that the society is so different and it's impacting these people in ways that we couldn't really imagine. But there are themes that are very similar to like characters in modern day shows and just people in real life. And I think that is what this show does so well, is like these people are not relatable in a lot of ways, but then they actually are very relatable.
Yeah. Yeah, which feels also Thronesian. I feel like there were a lot of other parallels that I was getting, especially in this episode, but in all the episodes so far, of the things that people really liked about early Game of Thrones, of that it really like digs into the dynamics of people and has relatable aspects to people, and then also has these moments of like true, like, whoa, dramatic twists and turns, political moves. First of all, the too much sake scene in general, incredibly tense. But when he like finally pulls out his bow and starts shooting them just past Mariko's face, was a really well done scene.
That was one of the best scenes I think in the show so far. That combined with the earthquake scene in this episode, I was like, this is one of the best shows
that's on like, right now.
We've gotten, well, definitely on right now, but that we've gotten in a while, I think. And it doesn't look, and I was just watching Three Body Problems, so that one was fresh in my mind. And I was like, it's just feeling a lot more mature and fully baked. And like the production design is all good. Like nothing takes me out of it versus what I was just criticizing about Three Body Problem. But I like both shows. I'm not saying one's bad and one's good, but it's just interesting to note that Shogun has like no flaws.
I will say, I don't mean to be like the naysayer here, but I will say that one scene during the earthquake where they sort of go out and above the town that gets affected, I did feel like, oh, we haven't really gotten a shot like that before. It does feel a little fake. Like it felt a little generated, but not enough to actually make me be like, that was a terrible episode or like anything similar to that. There are moments that I'm like, oh, I wish they hadn't done that.
I loved the earthquake. I thought that was so cool to watch. But also while I was watching this episode, there were a handful of scenes where I was like, I can barely see this because I'm watching it in a really bright room on a monitor instead of in a dark room on a TV. And there, like every modern show, there are just a lot of very dark scenes, which I appreciate from a cinematographer's standpoint. But from a realistic standpoint of where I'm watching it and how bright my screen can get, it's not great.
Yeah, I think that is a case for watching it when it comes out on Sundays. I know it's late, but – or no, is it Sundays? No.
Tuesdays? I know, but Matt's not watching it. It's very frustrating. And we do these Monday morning, so I need to watch right before.
The scene that I was talking about, the too much sake scene, also was threaded together with moments of levity in a way where I felt that same thing of like, this is such a good TV show, of Blackthorn trying to get everyone to eat the stew that he made, and Fuji being like going over to the servants and being like, throw this into the sea, get this as far away from us as you can possibly get. Like those moments of levity, really. I know I already said that, but just like interspersed with this incredibly tense dinner, I thought was excellently done. No notes.
I mean, they do that a lot in this episode. They show in the beginning Blackthorn like pretty hilariously sort of like translating his own speech into garbled broken Japanese. And he's like, bird, touch and die. He doesn't even say touch. He's like, touch it, die. And but it's funny in the moment. And then you're like, the literally couldn't have been less funny in the end. Yeah, that dichotomy was like jarring, but just very enjoyable. I mean, I like the depth to the show. I guess that's what it comes back to. But
it's very effective. That,
the first time I think that this show has really gone there, like I think this is such a halfway point in a lot of ways. Literally, it's episode 5 of 10. But I think that the way they build up to it is such a perfect midway episode. Like we're finally getting, okay, Blackthorne's learning the results of his actions. Yes, he's seen the way that social norms dictate everything here and politeness is everything, but like it's literally life and death. And then I also really liked, there's a scene where he's talking to Mariko and she tells him that his yearning for independence is basically keeping him imprisoned. And I think they show him realizing that she is right by the end of the episode. And tell me another show that is doing that well.
I can't. I think you're right. I think it's super well done. I was going to say this episode really had Blackthorne realizing first of all, even as much as he's been trying to avoid it, he is now part of Japanese society. Like he has to accept certain things or else his actions already have consequences. I feel like he continued to think of himself as like a pillar. He can kind of do what he wants, where he wants, and had not really, was sort of blind to the fact that everyone in his household was embarrassed, was like being looked down upon because of their association with him. And that finally hits home in a very dramatic way when his words literally get someone killed because he was embarrassing them by having this pheasant stinking up the thing. And so the old gardener offered to be the one to be killed by also helping the house save the family. Like everything is so interconnected. He's already part of society. He just really needed to admit it and like work within it. And yeah, by the end of the episode, he's kind of getting it. He's now not a lone pillar, I guess.
I also like the way they've shown that dying with honor is so important and that ends up being such a key piece of like the way people move through the society is like understanding basically when to like kill yourself because it would be more or like less shameful to do that, which is such a crazy thing to think about from our perspective of like our society, but something that they've done a good job of making sense within the context. Like in this one where they're like, they just sort of like as an aside almost say, well, he was ill, like the gardener was feeling unwell. So this was a better, like a more dignified way to die. And at first I was like, how is dying for the pheasant a dignified way to die? But then thought about it for another second and it's, oh, well, this was the right move in terms of like sacrifice sort of like, okay, this needs to be done. I know based on the like man of the house's word that this will cause me death, but this will sort of quote unquote protect the other people in this town who are wanting this thing to happen. So like, I will give myself for the townspeople. And that's, they've done such a good job of making that make sense in context, whereas like if you just said that to me and I've never seen this show, I'd be like, that's fucking insane. And I like the way that they're like weaving this in without it being too heavy-handed.
They've been teaching us, the audience, and also Blackthorne that from episode one. Like when Yabushige goes down to like off the cliff to go and try to retrieve the dude, the sailor guy, and a wave is coming and he like doesn't seem like he's going to be able to get back up. And so he just like takes his sword out and Blackthorne's like, what the heck are you doing? Like episode one, they drop that in and they've been leading us to more realizations about the way that this culture works throughout in a really lovely way.
Like Blackthorne is the stand-in for us, mm-hmm. essentially. But I feel like they could have done that maybe others are watching it and they do think it's heavy-handed. I feel like they're doing it in a way that's not too heavy-handed. But I liked the way that it came to a head in this episode. And yeah, other than that, in terms of it being a middle point episode, I also think we're getting a convergence of all the political forces.
Oh, yeah.
Really like capped off at the end with Lady Oshiba returning and being like, I am commander now. Or she doesn't say that, but basically does.
Yeah, that was the other big Thronesian twist that I felt. Like, her essentially being like, I'm taking over. And Ichigo being like, oh, you could do that? Hold on. Like, wait, what?
Yeah. She's the new, like, adversary. It's interesting because Ishido had been sort of the adversary. So then to bring Lady Oshiba in and be like, okay, third player, third major player vying. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's Thronesia.
The other thing is that we get confirmation. I know we'd already sort of realized this, but in the very first episode, it's hinted at that she's like willingly visiting her pregnant daughter. I think that's what it is. And we realize in this episode that like, oh no, she was like, we get confirmation she was there of not of her own free will. She was essentially being kept as a prisoner, which is like a big, like, we know that Torunaga's a schemer. We know that he's smart and he's got everything. He's like got his pieces where they want. But this was just like another confirmation of he's good at lying. Like in the first episode, you could feel like he was telling the truth. If we don't know that much about him, I was sort of like, it could go either way. I don't know. But also in the speech that he gives his son when he berates him for getting baited into killing, I can't remember the people's names, but the
Jozen.
That's the one. Yeah, with the cannons. And essentially gives this speech with his metaphorical hawk that he's holding. And he's sort of like, why would you do the killing yourself when you can manipulate others to do it for you? Like when there are other people who can be the pieces, who can be the pawns in your game, which is just like a further level of, he's really just like pulling all these strings. And it's super interesting. And I'm excited to see what happens next. I'm excited to see if Lady Oshiba is like a match for him in terms of scheming. That could be very exciting.
I hope she wins the Thrones game.
The Thrones game.
On the throne. I guess just because it was like a fun twist, but we don't know anything about her. I like about this show most of all is that you don't know really the truth behind any of these characters right now. Like Blackthorn's the protagonist. We don't know anything about him. He could have killed people back in his homeland. Like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? We're just assuming he's good. We don't know. He hasn't really been tested in a way that like shows his goodness or evilness or lack of either. He's sort of a neutral character right now. He's sort of the comic relief right now. But like, I mean, I guess I hope they do something more with his character. But I like that we just don't know really. We don't really know anyone. And they're just showing us episode over episode, like little glimpses of everybody's truth. I am sad, just to say this again, that there's only 10 episodes though, because it does feel like this should be like a 5-season show.
I agree. I wonder if there's any potential that they would sort of expand the universe. Because I do think this would be so big if it were allowed to have more episodes, have more stories like spinning off.
I mean, I'd never say never. They've given season 2s to lots of things that were supposed to be miniseries.
But anything that's based on a book. But the fact that
this is, yeah, based on a book makes me feel like it's probably a no.
I know I keep coming back to Game of Thrones, and I know this is a different situation because he's planning on finishing them. But technically, the Game of Thrones series follows the book series for a while and then diverges because the other books weren't ready. So like it's a little different because there is going to be more story in the Game of Thrones universe.
Yeah, I mean, if this is a book that has an end, like what are they going to do with the second season? But we don't know the end yet, so it's hard for us to speculate.
To your point about character development and like briefly showing things, I just want to reiterate again, Fuji, they've done such a good job at taking her from 2D sort of like disgraced character that we sort of feel sorry for but don't really have, she doesn't really play that big of a role, and now by this episode standing up for herself, standing up for Mariko, standing up for Blackthorn, like angry at Blackthorn but also at the same time sort of with this grace of understanding that he didn't know what he was doing. Like there's just so much depth in her character that I'm really grateful for.
And in the acting, that's got to be the best performance in the show so far.
She's so good.
Yeah. It is mind-blowing.
Trying to think if there's anything else about this episode that we should touch on. Oh, the swords. That was kind of a fun, I mean, playing off of what we already talked about, but Blackthorn, whether or not he realizes it or not, I kind of think he does. He must. that he was given these swords by Fuji that are sort of like tainted swords. And then when he goes and rescues Lord Torunaga after the earthquake and literally like pushes dust out of his lungs, and then Torunaga's like, where are my swords? And he gives him these tainted swords. In like Japanese custom, I don't know if it's like, I mean, he can't not accept them. That would not be saving face. But then he's sort of passed on to these tainted swords, which is a funny, I feel like whether or not Blackthorn realizes it, he's like playing the game well.
I think that's why he laughs. Torunaga laughs. I think he laughs because he knows. I don't think Blackthorn really understands the implications. I think he's still in the sort of like childlike understanding of this culture, and he sees he doesn't have swords, and he sees, you know, he knows that that's a status symbol for him, and so he offers them. I think he thinks in his childish understanding, like, this is me playing the polite society game, and doesn't understand the subtext of like the shame of the swords and all of that, which I think plays into the humor, and I think that's why Torunaga chuckles instead of being like offended.
Yeah, which is just like such a subtle piece of show running. I don't know. Maybe that happens in the book too. And it's
I was about to say, I wonder how much of this is in the book. I don't really feel compelled to read the book, to be honest. Sort of different from how I felt about watching Dune and then wanting to read Dune. I don't feel the need to read this.
What we should do is what we did with Last of Us is find someone who's read the book and talk to them about it so that they can give us the deeds, but we don't have to actually do it ourselves.
There we go. If you've read Shogun, let us know. And you could be our next expert guest.
Honestly, maybe my dad has read it. I don't think he's seen the show.
Bring on Tom. Well, he'd have to watch the show. That's all for now.
Yeah. Join us next week. We might have another check-in. We'll definitely be talking about the next episode of Shogun at some point. But it's also possible we'll have another show that we're both watching. Maybe Three Body Problem. If we both finish that, we could do a more.
Yes. And also we need to do our like April preview.
That's very true.
What's coming out in April.
Like, subscribe, leave us a review. All that jazz. Thanks for listening.